Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It's just over 2 years now since a Boeing 737 MAX flight crashed 6 minutes after takeoff en route from Addis Ababa to Nairobi, killing everyone on board. Irishman and UN worker Mick Ryan was one of those who lost his life that day. But 2 years on, Mick's widow Nisha says many questions as to what happened remain unanswered. And Nisha Connolly Ryan joins me now. Good morning, Nisha.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. It's only 2 years since this happened. And before we get into what happened and the questions that you want answered at this stage, I just want to talk to you a little bit about Mick, about his work and why he was doing what he was doing.
Mick was the global deputy chief engineer at the World Food Programme. WFP is the largest of all the UN agencies, and it provides food security to some of the most vulnerable people in the world. I suppose WFP is, it's not just about food, it's also about providing access to areas where people need it the most. And Mick, he was part of an engineering unit in there that provided this kind of infrastructure for WFP so that they could get access and provide humanitarian aid.
And he started his work with the UN first when he was only 24. I mean, clearly this humanitarian core was always there, was it? From when you met him, certainly, this was always what he was destined to do, was it?
I mean, from the moment I met him, Mick had just a lust for life, a lust for, he was very passionate about people and very interested in different parts of the world and different cultures. And he very much wanted to travel and see the world. And I suppose part of that then was an awareness of what people were suffering in other parts of the world. You know, places that we only hear about really in books or in the media. He just had a deep kind of fascination and interest in these places.
And you're a civil engineer yourself, and that's, you met through your work, is that right?
Well, we actually met in college, and we were both doing civil engineering postgrads in college, we kind of started our journey from there.
And did you work overseas together?
We did. When Mick was based in Sri Lanka after the 2004 tsunami, I had been working at home on my own kind of projects and stuff, and developing my own experience and skills. And we just decided we'd been apart for too long. And I joined him in Sri Lanka. And I suppose being an engineer, it meant I had something to offer as well to the situation.
And then you both came back, but then the draw to work on these types of projects overseas again was too much for Mick, and he went back to that work.
Yeah, we came back really to get married and, kind of have some sort of normal life in Ireland. But in 2012, Mick, you could say he had a calling or a draw towards it. He really missed the work. And we spoke about it, and there was a position opened in Ethiopia at the time. So he went to Ethiopia to head up the engineering unit there.
Mm-hmm. And you went on then to have two children.
That's right. And Sarah and MacDara, yeah.
And then when this happened, when Mick died 2 years ago, your children were very young, just 6 months and three. Is that right?
That's right. Sarah was 3.5 and MacDara was just 6 months old.
Okay, so it was March of 2019.
Yeah.
Will you talk to me a little bit about what happened from your perspective on that day?
It's a day I'll never forget. It was a normal Sunday morning. I was on my own with the two kids. It was about 10 o'clock that morning, and I just checked my phone and realized I had a number of missed calls and a message from a friend of ours in Rome. And, it just seemed a bit strange. The messages seemed a bit urgent. and he asked me to call him. So he had messaged me as well to say, had I seen the news? So I really thought nothing of it, and I called him back immediately. And that's when he told me that a plane had gone down in Addis and that Mick might have been on that plane.
I was reading back on what happened to you, and Mick had texted you, hadn't he, as he was getting on the flight at 4 o'clock Irish time, and then you had sent him a picture of yourself and the children when you all woke up that morning. So I just can't imagine the shock then of getting those messages.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it doesn't seem real, and in a way it still doesn't seem real that day happened. I don't think our minds are designed to take that kind of information in. Mm-hmm. It sent me into a state of I just kind of went numb and maybe into autopilot. I knew I had to ring my sister because my kids were at that point. I'd gone upstairs, so I just needed someone to come look after my kids that were downstairs. And you're just plummeted into some sort of twilight zone. I suppose now I realize, looking back, you it's trauma, you know, you just go into a state of trauma. So it's
And the crash in which Mick died, it was the second fatal crash involving this Boeing 737. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So about five months prior to the Ethiopian Airlines crash, a Lion Air flight took off from Indonesia, and 189 people were killed minutes after the plane took off. In both cases, the crashes were associated with a software failure known as MCAS, which is an acronym for Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. It's a Boeing acronym. And it was very similar circumstances.
Because what you've learned about the aircraft on which Mick was travelling, this was the Boeing 737 MAX as well. So despite the fact that this crash had happened, they continued to use this plane.
That's right. It seems inconceivable because what we found out afterwards from reports and testimonies that came out was when they looked into the first crash, the FAA, which is the Federal Aviation Authority in the US, had predicted a further 15 crashes would happen, specifically due to the MCAS. During the lifetime of these planes, which, you know, kind of accounts for 30, 35 years. But the Boeing took a gamble and they decided to keep the planes flying and in the meantime kind of work on the problem of fixing the MCAS.
To be really clear and explain to people, this plane, this MAX, was essentially an old plane with adjustments.
So the design, the plane itself wasn't an old plane. The design of the plane goes back to the 1960s. So the original Boeing 737 is a 1960s design. And every time a new plane is designed, it can take years before it becomes certified and can fly. In this case, they didn't have years because they were in direct competition with Airbus. Airbus had just released their own plane. It was the Airbus A320neo, and their customers were starting to buy up those planes. It was a fuel efficient plane, so they needed to get this plane up and running in a matter of months. So they basically went for amended certification under the 737 Boeing plane, and that's how they came up with the MAX.
Okay, I'm trying to make this simple for all of us to understand, but if Boeing were using this plane, for example, for American Airlines, it had two sensors on it. But if they were selling it overseas to the rest of the world, they gave them an option as to whether they wanted two sensors or one sensor. And you believe that's critical?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems insane that something that was, you know, a matter of safety, you know, like an absolute safe priority, that they would give an option for these sensors. They should have just been, you know, a minimum of two sensors installed as standard. But these sensors are like little weather vanes. They're quite delicate, but they're the things that they're called angle of attack sensors, and that's what sends the information to the MCAS. And if those sensors are faulty, it sends incorrect information to the MCAS, and MCAS kicks in and takes over the plane. So the pilots have no control.
And despite the fact then that in January, Boeing was fined $2.5 billion by the US Justice Department, the findings were pretty damning of the company. The Boeing MAX has returned to service now.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's kind of inconceivable. First of all, nobody has been held to account, not one single individual. The U.S. Conducted a congressional 18-month congressional investigation, and from that report, it came out that the FAA was a technically flawed agency. That Boeing had a culture of concealment within their organization, that there was too much of an overlap between the FAA and the Boeing for it to be appropriate in terms of putting passenger safety first. And then in terms of the deferred prosecution agreement, the DPA, which came up with the $2.5 billion fine.
Yes.
It's a joke, you know. It's
in the context of that company and the yeah. amount of cash that it has and it brings in on an annual basis.
And the breakdown even of the fine, the actual government fine is only 10%. The rest, 70%, go towards their airline customers. You know, it's just inconceivable. And also, the families were mentioned in this DPA, but we were never consulted.
And in basic terms, again, you want to know exactly what they knew or what they learned after the first crash.
Absolutely. We want to know what they knew, who knew what, and when.
I mean, this is a huge company. It's the biggest manufacturing company in America, and so many other companies linked to it providing parts for Boeing. But you're pursuing a civil case against Boeing in the United States.
That's right.
It's a mammoth task.
I suppose it is, but, you know, myself and a number of other families in America and Canada and France, we're just in the pursuit of the truth and justice and ultimately accountability, because you can't have real change. You can't guarantee that passenger safety will come first. You know, unless you have real change, unless you have accountability, unless you have justice. And we want justice for our loved ones that were on that plane.
I'm just going to ask you why, you know, you're doing this. Clearly, this is something, you're a civil engineer, so you know what you're looking at when you're looking at all of the technical reports and so on. But it must be taking up a lot of your time, a lot of your headspace? And if so, why is it so important to you?
I, to be honest, Claire, like it, I try and I don't try and make it something that I think about on a daily basis. When the reports come out, I read them. I try and get to grips with them. I understand them. I talk to people. I'm a civil engineer. I'm not an aviation engineer. There are so many aspects of all of this I've had to come to grips with over the past 2 years. And I've done that by talking to my lawyers, by talking to technical experts, by reading things myself. You know, so it has taken up, you know, yes, a lot of my time. But it just, for me, the person that Mick was, you know, the person I am, like the, you know, you can't put a price on this. You can't, like, you have to go after the truth. You have to go after justice. And at the same time, you know, I have to deal with the loss of my husband, my best friend, and the father of my two kids, and somehow get our lives together. the only way I can really deal with this is by, you know, kind of going in and out of it. There are times where I need to be quite immersed in it, and then there are times when I just need to switch off. And at those times, I have support from family and friends around me to help, you know, and just be there.
And how would you say you're doing? I mean, you talk about the shock initially of what happened and dealing with the trauma of it 2 years on. I know you've just marked the anniversary, the second anniversary of Mick, and his birthday. It would have been his 42nd birthday too. How would you say you and the children in particular are doing?
It's kind of, I mean, it's not something you move on from. It's something you move through. Our lives have been completely turned upside down. All the dreams that we had as a family have, you know, turned into an absolute nightmare. The last 2 years have been incredibly difficult for all of us, you know, but again, I would say that the support of family and friends have, you know, really helped us through. And I just try and keep focused on what Mick would want for us and to somehow keep moving forward. I really do draw my strength from Mick, and, you know, he brought so much joy to our lives, and I try and tap into that joy whenever and wherever I can. You know, but we continue to go through some incredibly painful moments, and what happened and why it happened is just unreal. It's unimaginable.
He was honoured by the Irish Red Cross recently. Was that important for you and for the wider family?
To have Mick honoured with the Humanitarian the Year Awards by the Irish Red Cross last year was incredible. You know, when something as tremendous like this happens, it changes your world. But also you don't want the person to be remembered for just having gotten on a plane that crashed. Mick was an incredible person. He also really admired and respected the Red Cross, and, you know, particularly as frontline workers. And I know he would have been very humbled by the award, and we're just incredibly proud of him for all that he achieved for humanity and the person he was. Like, he was a humanitarian every sense of the word.
Well, Nisha, thank you very much for talking to us, and we wish you well with that ongoing action. Nisha Colony Ryan.
Thanks, Claire.
We put the points raised by Nisha to Boeing, and they've sent us a statement this morning. They say, "We offer our sincere condolences to the loved ones of the passengers and crew aboard Lion Air Flight 610 and Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302. And the memory of those lost drives us every day to ensure the highest levels of safety and quality in everything we do. Boeing has implemented changes that ensure accidents like these will never happen again, and these changes have been validated by the regulatory agencies. We continue to work with global regulators on the safe return to service of the 7378 and 7379.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.